Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Coleman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holly. This episode will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Reading on the road at the Majeski Stadium. We'll also be discussing the latest in Fulham news and speculation. Well, first of all, it looks like my co-host is on the line with me. Mr. Holly, how you doing?
Hello, Russ. Hello, everyone. Hello, Mike, I think, as well.
I'm going to bring him on in 1 second, my friend. What was that, David?
I say it's been a quiet week, and looking forward to doing the show, really.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it as well. And we have a good amount to get through, David. But listen, we do have our co-host, as you mentioned. Mike is on the line with us. I'm going to bring him on. He wanted to come on for the beginning of the show. Mike, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, Russ. Hope you can hear me. I'm actually driving, but hands-free, so not breaking any rules.
Mike, thank you for joining us. You're going to be on for the first topic of the show, and we are actually, I'll just start with you. What we're going to start the show talking about is Moussa Dembele, and I'm just going to read the announcement from the club. It's on the Fulham FC website. I want to get your thoughts on it, and then, of course, David's as well. The article is entitled Moussa Lands London Football Award. Football striker Moussa Dembele has been named Football League Player of the Year at the London Football Awards on Thursday evening. Presented the award by Sir Trevor Brooking, the young Frenchman beat White's teammate Ross McCormack in the going, as well as Brentford's Alan Judge, Matt Phillips of Queen's Park Rangers, and Jay Simpson of Leighton Orient. Dembele missed out on the London Young Player of the Year award to Tottenham Hotspur's Dele Alli. Okay, Mike, that was the announcement that was made last night. What are your thoughts on Moussa Dembele's award here?
Yeah, well, I mean, the reason I wanted to come on was because, I mean, let's put this award in context. It's the Evening Standard, who struggled to find South West 6 at the best of times, and it's just for London teams, and it's the Football League Award. Now, I know there are a couple of other London players in there, from Charlton and another club, and then also Ross was. And, you know, if you're going to look at it as a Fulham fan, out of Ross and Moussa, then you're going to give it to Ross, aren't you? Ross is going to be the player of last year, right? You know, if you count it across two seasons. But what I really found disappointing today was Moussa's won this at the age of 19. Okay, he's been presented, he's had a good night, you know, wherever they held it. And all I've read, well, the majority of stuff I read this morning was, how's he won that? He's crap. He should be Ross. You know, it's disgraceful. And then things like that. It's just, you know, it's a poxy little award. It's not the Football League Writers or the Players Award. You know, it's a little award, and they've given it to Moussa. And it's just an excuse for people to lay into him and say, you know, all the typical stuff we've been reading and hearing about him. Why can't people just be happy that one, a Fulham player has been recognised, given how rubbish we've been the last couple of years. And, you know, it's also, you could look at it one way, is, look, Moussa, you're at Fulham and you can, you will be recognised. And that's got to be a good thing for the club.
Mike, I totally agree with you, and I'm glad that you could join us for this opening topic. And when you told me you wanted to come on and talk about this, I was all for it. I want to congratulate Moussa Dembele. It's an award. Whenever you win an award, it's good for the player, but it's also good for the club. So this is something that's actually good news and should be considered so. David, what are your thoughts about what Mike just shared about the award?
Well, I found it quite amusing in a way that normally I'm the one who's arguing on Twitter, either with people are rude about the show or people who don't think I'm right all the time. But this week it's been quiet. Like, every time I look, it's Mike's been arguing with people about different things. So it's nice to have a week off. And I can certainly see Mike's point. But I can also, I think I can see some people's point as well. I think you would probably say that out of the two, Ross is the better player, has been the more successful player. I wouldn't say Moussa hasn't, but I think Ross, that's probably, and if it came down to, you know, player of the season at Fulham at the moment, it wouldn't be Musa, would it? It would be between Ross or maybe Kearney or I don't know who else you'd go for. So I think I can understand why people are saying why him, but it's fantastic we got the recognition. Although, you know, me, Mr. Skeptical, I think there's always something behind it. And I think Mike was wrong when he said that the substandard don't know about Southwest 6. The substandard know about Southwest 6, all right, but it's not, I'm afraid, as they talk about it, it's the other team in Fulham. And I also wonder how much of this is behind, you know, maybe Tottenham Hotspur are somewhere behind this all and, you know, fanning up the flames to try and snatch him again in the summer. And, of course, I think, you know, the London sort of standard do seem to love Tottenham Hotspur, as the media seem to love Tottenham Hotspur for some reason. So I do wonder, you know, in my cynical old mind, if there's something behind it. But, no, otherwise, it's great that we get recognition and that he's got recognition. You can't take anything away from that. But I do understand why some people say, well, they think Ross was a better recipient, potentially.
Okay, very interesting. Mike, what are your thoughts about what David just shared?
Yeah, I mean, I want to be clear. I'm not saying that Musa should have won. You know, I said it at the beginning, it should have been Ross. It's just another excuse to bash one, the youngsters. I know I'm protective of them. But also, you know, just celebrate the fact that a Fulham player has actually won an award, you know,
that's
apart
right.
from being the worst player in the league or something. And so, you know, and you're also, you're looking for this player to sign a contract. And I was told the other day at the under-21 game, they're still negotiating with him. There is a chance, no matter how slim it is. And so, you know, if he's going to, you know, and he does go on social media, and yeah, it just... Just really disappointed in and some posters, you know, some fans, and you know, their reactions. That's all. And I just wanted to come on and yeah, Dave's right. I have had a few arguments this week on Twitter over various things and on the message boards. You know, things should be on the turn for Fulham. We had a bad result last week, but there is a lot of good stuff going on at the club. It's difficult to see at the moment, but, you know, foundations being laid and, you know, everything I hear, even today, you know, there was stuff about Jokanović I heard. And, you know, that man is in charge at the club and we should look forward now to next season and just not look for any kind of excuse to bash our current players. And I know that's partly the argument against him, is that he doesn't want to sign, but, you know, just show a bit of faith towards him and just celebrate the fact he got the award. So thank you for letting me come on the show and just rant a bit while I'm driving. But, you know, I just wanted to get that off my chest, really.
Not a problem, Mike. I'm glad that you contacted me, that you wanted to come on and just share your thoughts on that. And listen, I appreciate what you had to say, Mike, and I understand where you're coming from. I also understand what David's saying. We could argue who should get the award, but you should be happy that a Fulham player won. That's your point, Mike, right?
Absolutely, that's my point, yes. And okay. I don't go with the conspiracy theories, but I understand where Dave's coming from. But yeah, so I just wanted to say that. And I'm going to have to drop off now because I'm heading into a black zone of 4G coverage near Woking, so I know I'm going to drop off in a second. But once again, you know, thanks for that, and hope you have a good show. And hopefully I'll see you tomorrow, Dave.
Yep, see you in Reading, hopefully.
Okay, cheers, Mike. Everyone. Have a good night, my friend. Okay, that was Mike Gregg joining us for a good 7 or 8 minutes, David, just talking about the Moussa Dembele situation. Any final thoughts before we move on, David?
No, I just found it funny, really, that I was sitting in a meeting of the tennis club on Tuesday night, and I started getting all these texts from Mike and bad language and everything, and I said, who's upset you? And he said, everyone. And he'd had some argument about what we're going to be talking about soon, about Jazz Richards as a centre back with someone, and he was ranting and raving, and then he sent me another one saying, sorry, I just needed to get it off my chest or something, you know. So yeah, it's good to see that Mike sometimes as well, because, you know, I fly off the handle occasionally. It's good to see that, you know, everybody, you know, has both sides to them, and, you know, are passionate about it, really, I think. And I don't think there was that much disagreement with me and Mike, really. I think we both agreed that Ross was probably a more a more worthy recipient in terms of ability and achievement. But I'm with Mike completely. You know that anything you do get, you've got to welcome, and whether you agree,
absolutely,
whether it was the right person or not, you know, all you can do is greet the award with sort of with praise, and certainly not sort of be negative about it and saying, oh, well, he's crap. Or, and I've seen tweets that people saying he doesn't run around, or he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. You know, we're not sending out awards for what people don't do. We're sending out, awards for what they do right. And obviously he's done something right, whether Tottenham Hotspur have, like, put the standard up to it, whether it's the standard of, come to their own agreement. Maybe someone, they sent a reporter out, but he got off the wrong tube station in Fulham and came to Craven Cottage by mistake instead of that other place. Who knows? But anyway, it was good news for Fulham, and it's good to see some praise. And, if anything else, being cynical again, if it puts any money on top of his transfer fee when he goes, all the better.
You are a cynic, David. There's no question about that. But I love everything about you, my friend. The good, the bad, the ugly, everything makes you David Holly, and that's why I'm very happy that we could do this show together. All right, my friend, let's move on. Let's talk about item number two, and I'm going to read the announcement regarding George Cohen, and then we'll talk a little bit about it. This came out on Wednesday, so I'm just going to read right from the announcement. Fulham Football Club is delighted to announce that it has commissioned esteemed sculptor Douglas Jennings to create a statue of George Cohen. It will be displayed at Craven Cottage and unveiled in October 2016 to celebrate the 50th anniversary of England's famous World Cup victory in 1966. For many years, George has been a fantastic ambassador for Fulham's work in the community. As part of the fundraising process, two initiatives in his name will be launched with the aim of improving men's health through local dementia care and health preventative programs. The statue and the dementia and men's health programs managed by the club's foundation will require significant funding. Fulham's chairman, Shad Khan, has pledged to match every single pound raised to ensure not only the statue is erected, but that the foundation can deliver initiatives supporting George's chosen cause. Fans worldwide will also be given the opportunity to contribute in a multitude of different ways, including a personal engraving on a brass plaque that will adorn the stone plinth on which the statue will stand, along with money can't buy experiences involving the Fulham team. As Fulham and England's right back, George played 459 times for the Whites and 37 times for his country. His entire career was played in the black and white of Fulham, and he remains a host of his own George Cohen Lounge on match days at the cottage, where he delights visitors with anecdotes and tales of his former playing days, along with insightful analysis of the club's most recent performances. And I can continue to go on, but that just gives you the flavor of the announcement. David, what are your thoughts about this statue going up for George? Also, the initiatives, the fundraising initiatives for his causes. I do want to mention, Sarah did let me know that actually on Monday the fundraising page will be launched. So if fans want to make a donation, they can. It will be it will be up on Monday. All right, David, what do you make about the whole announcement for George Cohen?
Well, it's great all round. Obviously, George has been a fantastic servant for Fulham, and as you mentioned, he's still involved with the club. You know, he was our World Cup hero. I dare say, Johnny Haynes may have had a chance had he not had the car accident in the early 60s, which stopped his England career, because he was still young enough at the time as well, well young enough at the time to have played for England. But it wasn't to be, but George Cohen was, and he was, one of the unsung heroes, I think, of that English team. Sort of quietly went about his job whilst others, got the plaudits for the goals and things like that. And as I say, still involved with Fulham. And it's great to see him. I know George has had his own health scares in the past, and it's good to see him still going strong. And the charity we're talking about and things, dementia is a terrible illness. I mean, I lost my mother to it, so I can speak from it personally. Obviously,
I lost my grandmother.
We lost Jimmy Hill recently as well, of course, to dementia. And I think for me personally, it's a big fear. I think for all of us as we get older, it's a big fear. Now, if my aneurysm came back and I dropped down dead, then so be it. I would have lived my life to the full to the last minute. But with something like dementia, you have a very long and slow lingering existence. And, obviously it's hard just to speak from you know, the experience of being someone with dementia, that's not possible. But from the outside, it's very, very difficult for your loved ones and friends and family to see someone slowly slip away like that. I'm sure that the people themselves are not in any great discomfort, so to speak, but still, you know, they lose some of their memories, or they lose all their memories, and it's an awful thing. And if there's a way they can find with charities and raising money that we can help perhaps prevent these things or delay them or prolong them, then so be it. As I say, if you drop down dead doing something you're enjoying, you have a heart attack, it's sad and it's tragic, but at least, you know, you had a full life probably until that point. But this is an awful thing, and it's awful for everybody involved. So hopefully we can raise lots of money, and it will go to some good somewhere.
It will, David. And as you were talking about, you might have heard me mention that my grandmother had Alzheimer's and died of Alzheimer's, and it's something that's very personal to me, as she lived with us during that period of her life, and it was very hard to watch the end. And I love my grandmother, and I'm thinking about it right now as we're talking about this. So when I saw this this tribute to George Cohen, and then of course it also goes along with the charities that he supports, and one being dementia, and then of course the situation that we're talking about, I thought, you know, we should do something. David, you and I have talked about doing something. So what I'm going to do now, starting with this show, I'm going to donate a pound for each show we do until the end of the season, which will include the Bolton post-match show, and I'll add up how many shows we've done, and I will make a donation to the Fulham FC Foundation for George Cohen's causes, because they are personal to me, and obviously I think it's important to get involved, and I want to get involved. So I am going to donate a pound for each episode we do from here until the end of the season, including that post-match show, and then I'll send it off in care of the show Cottage Talk for George Cohen's causes, David. You know, I thought you and I have talked about it. I think it's a worthy cause.
No, certainly. It's a shame we can't donate a pound every time the C word is used, because that always crops up a few times. Or every time you say again, of course, and that would be making a bigger donation. But I think maybe you should do it every time you get involved with a debate about Deflategate. You should also make a donation of a pound, because that seems to pop up a lot as well, as you notice. And I'm sorry for those obviously weren't involved, but I couldn't resist but have a little wind up with Rush yesterday when Deflategate reared its head again.
That's okay, David. But in all seriousness, you know, I wanted to do something, and I think this is an extremely worthy cause. And so I want to get involved. I'm also obviously very happy that George Cohen is going to have this statue for him, well-deserved. So many good things coming from the club. And like I mentioned, Sarah Brooks did email me just to mention once again that the fundraising page will be launched on Monday. So be on the lookout for that. And David, I did say that we would do, you know, I would do it in a pound every time I said again, but I was doing it too much. I'd probably be broke. So I thought this would be an easier donation once per show. So that's what I'm going to do, my friend.
Okay.
All right. Let's move on. And let's talk about something else, David. Get West London had an article about Jazz Richards and had an interesting quote from Slavica Jokanović. I'm going to read the quote to you. Quote, Jazz can be a fullback for both sides. It can also be one of the center backs, too. And I spoke with him and am hoping to open his mind. David, I almost fell out of my chair when I saw this. I actually saw our co-host Mike Gregg tweet this out, and I was surprised by this. This article. What are your thoughts about this situation with Jazz Richards?
Now, this is one of the ones Mike was arguing with someone with on Twitter, because it got into the sort of state. Well, maybe Grimmer, of course, can play there. Grimmer has played centre back before and played right back, so it was who was better. But this is very interesting, because it's not saying what Jazz Richards sort of can do. It's sort of what he can't do. He's almost saying, well, I've decided now, you know, that Ryan Fredericks is better at right back, or that Ryan Fredericks
right.
is better, you know, as the wing back, because we, you know, I want to try and use this wing back system, and therefore, basically Jazz is no longer first choice. However, Jazz, you know, I don't want you to get too upset because I know you can play in lots of positions. You know, he's been relegated from, you know, being first choice right back for several coaches to being, you know, jack of all trades and master of none now. But I must admit, centre back, I was a bit taken aback with that because he is, you know, we talk about Michael Maddle being quite short. Jazz Richards is very short for a centre back. Although, you know, he does get up quite well and leap quite well as, you know, as a right back. That is one of his better qualities. I think he's only 5'8", something like that, Russ. So, you know,
I found that very strange. That's why I was surprised, David. I believe he is fairly short. That's why I was surprised by it.
But it's just kind of a strange statement to make, really, because I can understand him saying, well, you know, he can play both sides as fullback. We have seen him appear at left back. He's not particularly good there, but yeah, we have seen. Well, he's not particularly good at right back either, so that sort of makes a pair. But you know, it's a strange thing to say, but when we have a team that's very heavy with centre backs already, because of course we have, you know, the ones we've talked about. We have Stearman, who, you know, hasn't been getting in apart from last week. Ream not really been played. Hutchison's been out on his ear. You know, Grimmer, if he was here, could play there. Then we have the other two, like Donnelly and Cameron Burgess, who also, you know, have been touching on the first team squad in the past. So to put Jazz there potentially in front of any of those would be, you know, it'd be a bit of a surprise, really. So it does seem that the coin has dropped with Jukanovic and that he's realised that Jazz Richards isn't, you know, a great player anymore. And it almost sounds as if he's saying these things to appease him more than anything else, because do you really expect Jazz Richards to pop up as a centre-back? It would be a big shock for me. I think the men in the white coats would have to be visiting Jukanovic for that to happen. I really do. I could certainly see Jazz having to fill in a full-back on either side if there are injuries or if, you
right.
know, if we change format. But you saw even last week, and although it didn't work, it was pretty horrible. Even when, you know, Fredericks went off, he didn't bring Jazz on. He chose to, you know, to play first Tunnicliffe there, and then latterly he played Labiad there. So, you know, a bit of a slap in the face of Jazz, I'm afraid.
No, listen, it's interesting. David, I couldn't imagine that he would play centre-back because of the height, but I could see him being a backup at either fullback position. That's where I thought he could fit. And I still think you could use him in certain situations, David, like you said, if there's an injury. I just think at this point, for me personally, I think he's a backup. And I think part of coming out of this article, David, is that it's been established now that Ryan Fredericks has the job, which to me I think is a good thing to come out of all of this. Nothing against Jazz Richards, but I think Jazz Richards can be a nice backup. We'll just leave it at that. And we'll see, you know, maybe at times he can play left back. I don't know. But the positive to come out of this for me, David, is that it's established now. Ryan Fredericks is your wing back or your right back.
Well, that's what we'd like to believe, assuming, of course, he's fit for tomorrow, which we haven't heard. Well,
sure.
I haven't heard anyway, of course. But he did go off with, you know, he looked quite injured last Saturday.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I haven't seen anything about him, and there was no mention of him in the team news. So that's something worth watching tomorrow when the lineups are announced, my friend. All right, let's move on. Let's spend just a few minutes on these two topics. We tried to get it in last week, but we couldn't get it in. Let's go to the College Talk roundtable, David. It's funny because when I was going to ask you this last week, Fulham were in a better position than they are now. When do you think you will feel comfortable that Fulham are safe from relegation? When will you feel comfortable?
I'm fine now, actually. I can't believe we could be that bad to slip into the bottom four or whatever, or the bottom three. I just don't see it. I just think the other teams are worse, and we just couldn't, you know, it would be beyond belief for that to happen. And as you know, I re-ran my poll this week, the one we did earlier, a few weeks ago, maybe 6 weeks ago or so.
Yes.
And I had 151 votes, which is quite good for me. And if you saw it, I can read out the results. And
please do, David. Please do.
Yeah.
Please do.
This is for, you know, so exactly the same question as I asked before, with four options. where do you think Fulham will finish this season? And this is just obviously based an update from what we had before. And the votes were, I guess, fairly similar. The voting proportion was fairly similar. We had, it's actually, I've had 149 votes now. I don't know how two people have unvoted it somehow. I'm not sure how, but anyway. So 21st or lower, which is obviously, you know, the dodgy positions, 21, 22, 23, 24, 5% out of about 150. So not too many there. So it's about seven or eight votes. Thought we would be there. Second biggest group was 17th to 20th, was 34%. The winners were 13th to 16th with 55%, and that's where my prediction of 14th comes into.
Right.
And of course then 12th or higher, which is where your prediction comes into, only 6% think we've finished 12th or higher. And I have to say, and it's not because you said it, Russ, but after seeing what Mike said in the week, I'm starting to worry that my prediction of 14th is overambitious, that I'm not sure we'll make enough points up to gain that much. Obviously, I think we'll stay above 21st. I'm pretty sure we can do that. But I'm not sure how much higher we will climb, because as Mike said, to get to wherever it was, 10th, we would need to play like the team in first position to get there now. So,
yeah,
55% anyway, so just over half of all the votes thought we would finish from 13th to 16th somewhere. So 13th, 14th, 15th or 16th. But I'm fairly happy that we have the right man in charge to at least see us through the season. Unless something terribly goes wrong, I don't think we're going to be relegated.
I don't either, David. You know, I've been there from the beginning, but honestly, I feel much better now that Slavisa is in charge. And you are right. When Mike ran the numbers and told us the numbers, my prediction looks extremely difficult, and I cannot see, I'm not going to give up defeat yet, but I'm pretty close there, because it would have to take a monumental effort to get to 10th. But you never know. Mike really, he laid it out for us. It's a difficult road, but I cannot see Fulham getting relegated at this point. I there are teams behind us. Our goal differential is good, so I can't see it happening. Not the positive thing, and I'm glad that you're kind of coming around to that. All right, David. Next topic. This is an interesting one. Starting with Roy Hodgson, rank the Fulham managers, head coaches from worst to best. We are going to eliminate Slavisa. We're going to eliminate a few others. You know which ones. So you tell me. Starting with worst, going all the way to best.
You talk about eliminate. I think the worst has got to be the most obvious choice ever, and if we eliminated him before we signed him, we might have been in a better place than we are now. So I think it's pretty obvious the worst has got to be Mad Felix. It has
yes.
to be the worst.
Oh, totally.
I don't think there's any argument about it. Anyone's going to argue that one at all, really. It then gets harder as you go up, really, because I don't think you can really count or anything like that. The interim period with Stuart Gray, they were only here just to fill in a gap. So
sure.
We can't really count them, and then we can't count Slavisa either. So that really leaves then people like, you have Mullenstein, Yole, Kit, and of course Hughes and Roy. So this is a difficult one, and I think for me the next worst has got to be Martin Yole. Although he had a better pedigree and experience than some of the others, the biggest decline obviously really happened under him. I think it was his lack of a lot of things really that saw us in that kind of fatal dive towards the championship. I know we were under Felix by the time it actually happened, but I think it was, you know, he stayed too long. His ideas were, you know, just weren't right. He had too many favourites. We had all the whole problem of he used to favour Ruiz over De Jager all the time, for example. And, you know, when De Jager got a bit of a run, we perked up a little bit. You know, there's lots of issues. It wasn't just that. But, I mean, I think Ruiz was, unfortunately, Yole's albatross around his neck, wasn't it, as you say,
yes.
expression. That was a signing that kind of defined things. That was his big money signing. It never really came off. Berbatov as well, maybe some people would say. I think, you know, Berbatov brought a lot of pleasure and cheer to Fulham, but also he divided opinion as well. But it was clear that he was a very skillful player, like Ruiz, and he did have a good run with us. But I think the decline really, you know, was under Yol latterly. I think it started before that, but it really heightened under Yol. So he's going to be my next worst. I'm then going to, I think, you know, one above him will be Kit Simons. And I go above Yol because the damage was already done when Kit took over, really. Kit stabilised the ship for a bit.
Yes.
We didn't get any worse, necessarily, but we didn't get any better either. And so Kit's probably legacy, unfortunately, is that in mediocrity, if nothing else. You know, inconsistency and mediocrity. He did stop the decline, and you have to give him credit for that. But then after Felix, that was probably an easy job for some, or for many. But he just lacked imagination, Kit. And again, we weren't going anywhere under him. So that leaves the final three, really. Muhlenstein and Hughes and Hodgson, of course. And I think, obviously, it would be in that order as well. Muhlenstein, I think he showed a lot of promise. He obviously had a great track record. You know, Kit, we can't judge. He had no track record to judge on. Yol had a reasonable track record in the past, but also some failures. But Muhlenstein, as a coach, had been very, very successful and is very well respected. And I think, you know, we saw an improvement under Muhlenstein initially. And then he was sacked on the back of, you know, a draw against Man United, I think it was, and a narrow defeat to Liverpool. And, you know, and they're not really... It's a very high benchmark, isn't it, compared to some of the other things. And I think that Muhlenstein perhaps could have turned things around. But it was the interference of Wilkins and maybe also Kerbishley, and God knows why they were brought in, because, you know, I think Muhlenstein's problem was he was a coach, he wasn't a manager. He appeared
right.
A bit awkward sometimes in front of the camera. He made a couple of gaffes. I think he speculated, he mentioned a transfer. You know, Fulham normally keep very tight-lipped on these things until the deal is done. But he mentioned something, I can't remember which player it was now, maybe you can remind me. But he was a little bit naive, perhaps, but I think tactically he was quite shrewd. And I definitely think that we picked up a bit when he came in. And he just, for all the good that Felix McGough did, we may as well have kept Muhlenstein and given him a chance. And, you know, he may have turned something around. But the problem was, it was, you know, the underinvestment and the ageing squad as well. But Yol certainly hadn't helped. Here comes the other two. I mean, if it's a toss-up between Hughes and Hodgson for second spot, and it has to go to Hughes. You know, he did leave a sour taste in the mouth when he left us after only one season. But clearly, he had something about him. You know, he introduced Dembele into the team. Even if it wasn't him who sourced him, I don't know, but he introduced Dembele into the team. And he kind of, you know, he kept going where Roy had left off. And after a very bad start, you know, we were down in the bottom three at Christmas, we rallied to finish eighth. So, you know, he definitely had something about him. And I was very disappointed that he left. And I was disappointed with his comments. But, you know, we know why he said these things now and where he's come from. And in time, you know, people have started to agree that there was a lack of ambition or an apparent lack of ambition.
Sure.
Obviously, Roy has to rate at the top. I don't think there's anything really. Again, Roy and Felix are probably the easiest ones out of that list, because under Roy, we achieved much. Now, he wasn't perfect, you know. We've been critical of Roy on here sometimes. His away league performances or his setup for the away league game sometimes is very negative. But the fact that the home form was so good, normally we didn't need the away points as much as we do. And you know, we had a great finish at seventh, our highest ever finish at seventh. The European run, you know, being saved from defeat from relegation with four wins out of the last five in the Great Escape season. And he just, you know, he was a very unifying figure. I don't think anyone really, you know, had anything bad to say. I mean, there's always people, you know, managers and coaches, people love and they hate. But I don't think anyone really hated Roy at all. As I say, the worst you could say about him is that his tactics away from home sometimes were a bit dour. We were set up for a 0-0 draw at best. But he got, you know, players to work together, and awkward players. People like Zamora, who have a reputation maybe for being a bit awkward to work with. And he was great. He did a great job. He had a fantastic season under Roy. And, you know, he brought in a very, you know, good mix of players. People like Damien Duff, of course, Mark Schwarzer. People who, although they were getting on a bit, you know, became excellent servants of the club. People like Chris Baird had a renaissance as well. Danny Murphy, of course, as well. Although Danny Murphy was a signing from by Sanchez, it was really under Roy, I think, that he came into his own as well. So, you know, it's pretty obvious that Roy is my number one choice, and I'm sure.
Sure.
You may tell me otherwise in a minute, because I haven't read the Facebook pages, but there may be someone who disagrees, but I very much doubt it.
Yeah, I didn't put it on the Facebook page. That's my bad, David. But if you're asking me, I agree with your order. The only thing that I would have changed, David, this is my only disagreement with you, was that I would have Rene worse than Kit. Because Kit really saved us last season, so I'm going to give him a little bit more credit. Rene, I don't think, had enough time and could have been better, but I'm going to give the edge there to Kit. So that's the only difference, and I think he did a great job of explaining all of these managers/head coaches. All right, my friend, let's get into our preview. To really help us with the preview, I'm going to play the 6-minute clip from Slavisa, and then we'll talk about it. That'll go right into our preview. Sound good?
That's great.
Okay. Without further ado, here is Slavisa, and thank you, Sarah Brooks from Fulham Football Club, for allowing us to use the clip. Here is Slavisa.
Slavisa, I know you were disappointed not to get the points on Saturday, and you have said that we were well beaten by Middlesbrough. What were the learnings from that game? What can you put your finger on that were things that went wrong for you in that 90 minutes?
First of all, we made many individual mistakes, and don't exist any tactic for fix this kind of the problem. And for be honest, they will be more solid. They will be tactically better team what we are in the team. They run more kilometers what my team is running. Technically, they play better game what we play. And at the end, they made less mistakes what we made. At the end, this result is not big surprise for us. If it happened, all these things what happened this last afternoon in our stadium. It's for be honest, I cannot complain about attitude in the training where we are working. It's simply we need to avoid this kind of the mistakes, and we need to implement this work what we are doing in the training ground, in the day where we play the game and where we compete. We made many chances, and we didn't be enough concentrated for try back ourselves in the game. For be honest too, we don't make these chances because we play very good good game. But this situation where we have the chance, we need to be more clinical, and we need in this moment play with more confidence and believe, because our job is win the game, and we can be satisfied only at the end if we go at the home with 3 points. It's this is target for all the football team, and this need be our target too.
So Reading is going to be a tough game, obviously. 8 places above Fulham in the league, and actually playing very well now. What are you expecting? What is the game plan for Fulham visiting Reading?
First of all, I believe I need to support my team. I need to participate in all the game. I am not scared about change the players, so about change the tactic and try choice what I believe is best way for us. We're gonna try find the best solution what we believe it's necessary for a Reading game. They are actually right now in last months very competitive, where they know what they need to do in the game, play very compact, and it's a very fast and strong team. It's generally they find some kind of the identity, and they know what they want to do in the field. What is important, it's really important players play with confidence and believe in the plan, and push hard for first to last minute. With this mentality, with this kind of the concentration, we have opportunities for win the game, and this is target.
You said you're not afraid to make changes. Does that mean we can expect something different on Saturday at the Majeski?
I try make my job, and it's where I make my job. I try find the sense, and I don't want people. Thinking I am change things for changing. This is without any chance, without any sense. I try support my team. My job is detect what happened in the game, and try find solution. Sometimes it's difficult switch the game and change the structure or try something different. Sometimes you need to follow one plan what we are choice at the beginning of the game. But what I say before, it's I need to make it my job. My job is working with the team and in and participating where we are compete. This is my style. I'm gonna continue doing like what I am doing in all my life.
Lasse Vikens Christensen is still missing from the squad. Cooley Woodrow is training again. And last night there was another piece of good news for Marcus Bettinelli, who played another 90 minutes for the 21s and made a save, a penalty save.
Yes, it's
positive for the squad.
It's positive. It's always is good news for us. We have more people available for help us, and Woodrow start today. He made the first training with us. He still needs some time for being ready for fighting for being in the team and for start compete. Marcus, this is his second game in the goal, and he gonna be available very soon. Help us. This is all this things is good news for us.
We wish you luck on Saturday.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we are back, and that was an interview done on Thursday with the Fulham head coach, Slavisa Jokanović. I want to apologize for the audio being a little bit low, so if you do listen to it, try to turn up the volume a little bit. For some reason, the audio did not come out that loud. But, David, I think you got the gist of it. You probably watched the video version of it. What did you take out of this interview with Slavisa?
We didn't give too much away. I'm kind of trying to sort of analyse between the lines whether he's going to try and stick with the same system, whether he's going to change anyone around, whether he's going to change anything around. But, all he's basically saying is, we know the message, we need to be better than we were last week. We need to do better than last week. And he accepts that we weren't good enough last week. That's, that's why we lost the game. I found it hard. It wasn't just because of the low volume. I just find it hard to kind of read between the lines, really, and get a gist of what he wants to do, because I'm kind of in the dark of whether he's going to go with what we think is the sort of expected lineup now, whether there may be a surprise in there, or to also get a feel about Bettinelli, because he's played a couple of games now. I'm sure he could easily at least be on the bench tomorrow. if we see a sudden change of goalkeeper, then, you know, perhaps Lavisha is sharing my concerns about some of Lonergan's game. If not, you know, will he at least put Bettinelli on the bench because he's potentially a better goalkeeper than Lewis? That was one thing I'm trying to find out. Obviously, we know Corley's coming back, but we don't expect to see him yet. But we have got, you know, more than enough players to choose from now, even obviously with Stearman's suspension, because Stearman really only came in because Amabieta was out, and Amabieta, of course, is back. I see WhoScored.com doesn't seem to realise that, though. They have Reams playing tomorrow for some reason. But no, I don't know. Did you manage to find anything reading between the lines? Because I found it quite hard to get an idea of anything out of that one.
I was too. This one was a little bit difficult, David, to be honest with you. I really had a hard time reading between the lines, like you mentioned. So I think he was playing this really tight. I don't think he's trying to really let us know exactly what's going on with him right now.
No, that's fine. You know, that's fine. No, that's what I agree. I mean, it was just really, I've noticed since he's been here, although they do announce the team news, it's very, very kind of vague normally, apart from perhaps a couple of obvious ones. So we have no idea, obviously, because Garbett before and then Fredericks had that supposed looked a nasty injury last week. He may have just been a knock that he's managed to overcome, but, you know, there is no real clues about what's going to happen. Maybe Jazz Richards will pop up at centre back and surprise us all.
We shall see, my friend. We shall see. Now let's get into our preview of this match. The big news from the team news that the team released on Thursday was that Fernando Morbieta will be available for selection. Richard Stearman is suspended. So that was the big news from the team news. Nothing else really to share. You know, you were interested in knowing about Ryan Fredericks. Did not get any information on that. And now I'll just share with you some information on Reading. They are currently 12th. They have 11 victories, 10 draws, 12 losses. They've scored 38. They've given up 36. They're on a +2 goal differential, and they're on 43 points. Fulham are 20th, 8 wins, 12 draws, 14 losses. We've scored 51. We've given up 56. We're on a -5 goal differential and on 36 points. All right, David, again, this is from WhoScored.com, just to give you some information on them. Their strengths: creating long shot opportunities, creating scoring chances, shooting from direct free kicks, attacking set pieces, defending set pieces. They're all strong there. Their weaknesses: finishing scoring chances, protecting the lead, and they're very weak at defending set pieces. Their style: take a lot of shots. They definitely do that. Attempt through balls often, take long shots, short passes, control the game in the opposition's half, attack through the middle, non-aggressive, and opponents play aggressively against them. I'm also going to share with you real quick from an article from Charles Watts on Get Reading. He laid out the three key battles in this match. This is obviously from a Reading perspective. The three battles he wrote down were defensive midfielder Michael Hector versus Ross McCormack, midfielder Ola John versus Ryan Fredericks, and then striker Jan Kermagan versus center back Dan Byrne. Those were his three matchups for this match. All right, David, who are your key players tomorrow for Fulham against Reading?
This is an interesting one because it will depend again on the style. But for me, I've actually seen is it's going to be Fredericks in a way. This is a strange one to pick, but we were such a different team without Fredericks at wing back. There was no one else who could replicate that position. So if we're going to play the wing back system, we need Fredericks there to do what he does, to get down the wing. Although I don't think Fredericks has directly created a goal or anything. He's not had an assist, but he just it provides a shape and a width to the team that we don't have without him otherwise. You know, he does take people on. There's not many people, if anyone, in the team who takes people on. But, you know, by him taking people on, people go after him. It takes away maybe some of the pressure from people like Kearney. And you know, that it's all about creating that space in the middle. if Fredericks isn't getting, or if we're not getting down the right wing and wide, then they can drop inside a little bit more on Kearney, like happened last week. As I say, once Fredericks
right.
went off, the wing back system just really wasn't. I wouldn't say it was bad, but we didn't have any of the benefits of going forward. Okay, defensively we were quite tough in the end because we didn't after Fredericks went off we didn't concede a goal. But going forward, it just wasn't there. Garbutt doesn't do what Fredericks does. He's okay. He does help out, but he doesn't get in. And it's about having that three-pronged attack, isn't it? Having someone who can go down the left, someone who can go down the right, and someone who can come through the middle, like Kearney, all in support of these strikers. So it's an interesting one, but I think that's kind of the key. Although I don't expect Fredericks to score the goals or to win the game for a single-handedly if he plays. I think if he plays and we can keep that shape and he can do what he does, that might allow other people to play. The other big question, of course, is going to be who are we going to see in midfield? Regardless of the system, who are we going to see in midfield? Because, we have three games coming up in a week. Will he play Parker tomorrow and save him for next Saturday? Or will he rest Parker and keep him at home, for Burnley on Tuesday? Or what? What does he do with Tunnicliffe? Etc. We have Bear, we have O'Hara, and I think it's another game for midweek battles, really, again, isn't it? And they like to score from set pieces, and they like to score from long range shots. I saw, which is not really what I wanted to see, but that, again, keep them up the pitch, force them up the pitch, be strong in the middle. Assuming they play this 4-2-3-1, I noticed that. They haven't been big goal scorers of late, as far as I can see. The funny thing is they lost Nick Blackman, who was doing well for them, and I'm sure, as you've noticed, he's gone to Derby, and yet he's not really getting much praise there. They don't seem to rate him very highly. I know Andy Buckley Taylor, who we follow, doesn't seem to
yep.
be that keen on him. So looking at some of their scores, they're not been big scorers of late, have they, really? I mean, obviously, in terms of goals, we are 13 goals ahead of them in terms of goals scored. Of course, they're 20 goals ahead of us in terms of goals conceded. So, you have to take it both. But, of course, when we got those four goals past them at the Cottage, that was, that was quite a big thing for them. So they had been pretty tight up till then. But, obviously, they are, fairly low scoring and fairly low conceding team. So it's not going to be necessarily easy to break them down, but we certainly don't want to be giving them easy chances. So I think we're going to have to take the game to them. If we sit back, we're just going to be asking for a problem. We have to play the game in an offensive way, but we have to be tough in the middle as well.
David, I agree with all your points there, and I just want to mention my worry here in this match is that they do take a great deal of shots. David, they lead the league according to WhoScored.com in shots per game, 15.7. That's worrying, okay? Because and I've already mentioned that they do take a good amount of long shots. I noticed that on several of the videos that I watched, and that is a concern going into this match. But what I also noticed is that we should have our opportunity to score as well. So this could be a pretty open game. Believe it or not, this could be pretty open. I definitely think we're going to get our opportunities, and I agree with you that we need to take it to them, my friend. All right, we only have a little over 5 minutes left, so give me your starting 11 for tomorrow.
Well, the best guess I can do, I presume we'll see Lonergan in goal still. If we see Bettinelli, then obviously we know that Slavisa is not happy with his long shots and things, and he's taking methods, but I think we'll see Lonergan. I'm pretty sure the back three, we're going to see Amo Bieta back, who's been a favourite since he's returned. Byrne has also been a favourite, and then Madden, of course, the back three there. This is assuming there's no injuries that we haven't heard about. Garbutt and Fredericks are really the only options at wing-back if you're playing this system. Up front, I think we'll play the two up front. I think it was a mistake to leave Dembele on the bench last week. And try and replace him with someone in midfield who was not really an attacking midfielder. So Dembele and McCormack up front. Dembele will be keen to get out there and show what he can do after getting an award, I'm sure. Kearney behind him. So it just leaves two players to pick, and this is the hard bit. I think we probably will see Parker, because I think he'll probably pay Parker, you know, on Saturdays and maybe leave him out on Tuesday. But it's who will he play alongside Parker? And I think, you know, my best guess would probably be Baird still. Baird, of course, has been at Reading. He'll be, you know, desperate to get out there and show what he can do against them. So I think we probably see Parker and Baird, but it could be Tunnicliffe, it could be O'Hara, it could even be Ince, who, you know,
apparently
he's not injured. He's not injured, Ince, because, you know, he's he spoke as if he wasn't injured as well. I don't know if you saw that. But
I did.
So I'll guess on Parker and Baird to supply the sort of solidity and protection while Kearney can go forward, and hopefully the wingback packs can go forward as well to support Ross and Musa.
Okay, very good, David. I agree with your starting one. The only thing that I disagree, but you could very easily be right. You had Parker Baird. I'm going to say Parker O'Hara. That's what I'm going to go with. But we'll see what Savisa goes with tomorrow. All right, prediction time. According to the Cutters Talk Twitter page, here are the predictions from the phone supporters. We have 106 votes, David. 51% are predicting a victory, which is decent. Draw is at 25% and loss is at 24%. We have some predictions on the Cutters Talk Facebook page. Ben Reed, 2-2. Roger Lewis, 3-3. Justin White, I feel 3-8 to Fulham. Very funny. Okay, John Mason, like to think a victory but suspect a 2-0 loss. James Clay, 1-1 draw. Tom Ward, 3-1 to Fulham. Neil McLaughlin, 2-1. Late Ross winner, Stephen O'Keefe, 2-2. Dan Layton, 3-1. Tom Holly, 3-3. A Morvieta hat trick, but he also have an own goal. I love it. All right. David, before I get your prediction, I just want to say I am actually pretty sad that I'm not going to be at this match. This brought me back to the match I went to. I was at the Medeski back in 2012, and I've been sad all week thinking about this, wishing that I could be there. And I think it's going to be a kind of a high-scoring game. That's just my thought. But what's your prediction?
My fear is that, as with a lot of these games when we take a good away following and with expectation of wins, that we fall down. And I still fear a narrow defeat for us, I'm afraid. I had a straw poll at home, and the vote was sort of like a narrow defeat, like a 2-1 defeat, unfortunately, although my son has obviously made a white coat prediction there with a hat-trick from Morbieta, I think. So we'll see what happens. Let's hope we see a hat-trick from Morbieta, but I think that's pretty unlikely somehow. But maybe 2-1 to Reading, I'm afraid. But I hope I'm wrong again.
Okay. David, I think that it's going to be a little bit more high-scoring. I think we're going to edge this out. I think that Savisa really laid into the team this week, got them focused, and I say we're going to win this 3-2. And David, hat trick from Moussa Dembélé. I'm going with a hat trick from Moussa Dembélé. All right, David, great
Ross
show.
Might score then. Great show. Yeah, I said at least Ross might score then.
Right, exactly. All right, David, time to wrap it up. For David Holly, I'm Russ Cohen. Thank you as always for listening to Cutters Talk. Cheers, my friend. Have a great night.
Cheers, Russ. Thanks, everyone.